Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for today's webinar. My name is Justin Warner, and I will be our host for today's webinar on engagement magic, the five keys for engaging people, leaders, and organizations. Thank you for being with us today. Today's webinar, I am the host, and we're joined by the CEO of DecisionWise, Dr. Tracy Maylett.
Hey, Justin, thanks for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Tracy, thank you. Thank you for being here with us. And Tracy has been with DecisionWise for a few years. And
almost two decades.
That's a crazy how fast it goes. And is the author of two books, Engagement Magic and The Employee Experience. And we'll touch on those books in just a minute. Tracy is a thought leader when it comes to employee engagement and the employee experience, and is a frequent presenter at conferences around the world. In fact, Tracy and I were just in Brazil a couple of weeks doing a presentation on the employee experience. So, again, thank you all for being here. Today's webinar qualifies for one credit hour of both SHRM and HRCI credits. For those who complete the webinar, following sometime today, we will send you an email with those codes for participating in the webinar. For those of you who are watching this on demand, please email me at info@decisionwise.com to receive your code. We'll then verify that you have completed the course and send you the code for participating. Again, that email address is info@decisionwise.com. All right, Tracy, we've got that out of the way.
Okay.
And so let's go ahead and get started. So the webinar that we're talking about today is based on our research, things that we've talked about through the book, the Engagement Magic book, as well as the employee experience, the studies that we've been doing. So that's what we're hoping to discuss. And let me just be quiet and turn it over to the expert a little bit and let you start with this.
Excellent. And please feel free to make this a dialogue as we go through here, because I know that there will be some questions that we have that pop up here that love to be able to entertain and talk a little bit about. Thank you for mentioning these books. The reason why we're having this webinar is because based on a couple of these books that we do have that we have released over the last several years, and based on our last 5 years of research, we found some very interesting items or ideas when it comes to both leadership and the employee experience. And one of the things we want to do is make sure that we synthesize these ideas and present these in a way that can be actually used rather than some academic exercise. So while we do have a bunch of research here, then we'll talk a little bit about that research. In fact, we'll dive into some of these statistics. We want to make sure that we're able to actually use these and apply these. So the gist here is these books that we do have that we show you a little bit more about are based on 34 million survey responses. Justin, that's huge. That's the largest of its kind in terms of employee responses that we've been able to synthesize and use as this data. And that data is not just based in the United States. That's based in over 70 different countries. So basically what we've done is we've taken the concept of what creates engagement in an organization and an individual, what creates engaging people, engaging organizations, engaging leadership, and what we've done is we'll present some of these concepts here as we go through this.
So Tracy, if I can just add to that, so for anyone who would like to get one of these books, they can be found on Amazon, they can be on Barnes & Noble, anywhere that you can buy business books, you're going to find these best-selling books. I also forgot to mention, and you mentioned the dialogue, so we do welcome questions from the audience.
Sure.
So while we're talking, if you have questions, you have a question box on your screen, please feel free to send that through. We'll try to get it as we go, and if we have a little bit of time at the end, anything that we weren't able to get, but we really try hard to answer the questions as we go throughout. So please feel free to make that dialogue there.
Excellent. We're also excited. These books were actually just released in other languages. We were excited about. Also, we just added two more. Engagement Magic was just about 2 weeks ago released in Portuguese.
Correct.
So that was neat to see that. And then the Employee Experience, not very much before that, released in Japanese. So we were excited to see those come through.
Yeah, it's fun to watch that grow for sure.
These are not just, not just U.S.-based concepts. These are people-based concepts that we'll be addressing and apply throughout the world. So let's address it. Let's start with some of these. Can we start with some of the myths that we see out there? Now, Justin, you spent a lot of time as you look at what's being written out there when it comes to employee engagement and the employee experience. You also attend a number of conferences, and I would be surprised if you didn't see the same thing, which I did, which is every single presentation, every article starts with the idea that your employees are disengaged in what they do. Yeah. They don't have a desire to be at work, basically what it is. In fact, some of these, as we look at, we see all kinds of statistics pop up. This is one that I see quite often, the basic idea that 7 out of 8 employees are disengaged in their work, meaning that they're making no positive contribution to the workplace. They would much rather be somewhere else. Now, I've had those days when I would rather be somewhere else. We all do that. But what we're talking about is over the course of time, are they engaged or disengaged? And the statistics that we keep seeing that are being used over and over again, do you see these, by the way, as you present and you...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The idea that less than 15% of your employees are engaged in what they do. So the idea here is that most of your employees are disengaged in their jobs. Let's look at this in more depth. This means that I have to walk past 7 employees before I find employee number 8 who happens to be engaged in her job, right? Why not just fire the 7 employees, operate with that 8th employee, and move on?
Or we're all walking around horribly miserable.
Exactly right.
We do.
Exactly right. Well, let's look at this in a little bit more detail, too. We have to understand that we are whole beings, and what that means is that we don't have a work life and a home life and a social life and a family life and a community life. We are whole beings, meaning that what we do at work transfers also to work. While we do try for work-life balance, the fact is we cross over. And what that means is if I'm disengaged in my work life, I'm likely to be disengaged in my home life, in other areas of my life as well. So while we are talking about engagement in the workplace, we're also talking about our own personal engagement here. And the idea that 7 out of 8 people are disengaged, let's look at it logically. When was the last time you woke up and said, I sure hope my job is awful today? It's not human nature, right? We don't, that's not who we are. Our nature is to choose to engage in what we do. So we want to talk some real statistics here. And again, this was based on the database of really over 34 million employees. The idea that are people really disengaged in their role? Now, when I talk about engagement, I'm not talking about once in a while having a bad day at work, right? How was your morning, by the way?
I was just telling Tracy, it's been one of those days. So
I get it. You know, if I'm on hour number 13 of a 14-hour flight, I'm not excited to be at work that day. That said, I absolutely love my job. I love what I do. I'm engaged in what I do. Doesn't mean that we don't have times that we wish we were doing something else. That's part of life.
But should we tell them that the phone died like 4 minutes before we were starting?
That's a good. So we all have those 4 minutes before in the things that we do. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about our willingness to engage. We're actually going to talk a little bit later about what engagement is. But the idea of 7 out of 8 of your employees are disengaged, let's look at the real statistics here. So, Justin, can you tell us a little bit more about where these came from? Because these are actually updated numbers.
Yeah. So every year, well, in a DecisionWise survey, we have questions where we ask very specific questions that are related to employee engagement. These questions are non-actionable questions, but they help us measure the level of engagement that an employee has. And based off the way they answer those questions, we categorize them into one of these 4 categories, from fully engaged at the top to fully disengaged at the bottom, with what we call our key contributors and then the opportunity group in the middle. So the percentages that you see there are based off the DecisionWise 2019 benchmark. So what we're showing is that 31% of the employees in our benchmark show up as fully engaged, and 47% fall in that key contributor. These are the people that are heads down doing their job.
Right.
They love, they're at work. They might not be that fully engaged, but they are definitely engaged in what they do.
We call these people our strong and steadies, right?
Absolutely.
These are the people you want in your workforce.
Absolutely.
There's no question.
And then we jump to that fully disengaged group. And from my team, we often say to people as we give presentations that this is the group that is quit but hasn't told HR yet. And so there's not really a lot we can do with this group, although it's good to know what's driving them to be in that fully disengaged. But that opportunity group, you know, it has its name because we do believe that that's the group with the largest opportunity for us to help them move one way or the other. And so this spectrum gives us a greater perspective on the engagement levels of our employees, right, rather than having it be binary. Either they're engaged or not engaged. Because those numbers that you said makes it look like that, you know, everyone's in the red category.
Right.
And that is simply not the case.
You know, as we were working with a major health system, I was sitting down with the chief medical officer reviewing his engagement scores for the overall organization. And one of the things that he said is, you know, is this like I have a patient on the table that I have his chest open and I'm doing surgery, open heart surgery, and I ask the nurse to wake up the patient so I can see how you're feeling in this moment, right? They're not engaged in that moment. We're not talking about that, like you said. What we're talking about is this long-term, am I willing to commit to what I do? And we'll talk more about that. So overall, really what we see is that 78% of your workforce, I'm looking at our key contributors and are fully engaged, are engaged in what they do. That 17%, if this were an election year, we'd call this our swing vote, right? This is the group that could go either way. We need to figure out how to either get them into the party or help them out the door. Something interesting about that 5%, however, is that the studies that we do show that that 5% will rarely become engaged.
Whether at this organization or another organization.
Yeah. In fact, of that 5%, 80% of those employees, or about 80%, will never engage in any organization. So this tells us something about their trade engagement, who they are as individuals, right? Now, that said, we spend a lot of time in human resources saying, let's try to get them engaged. I hear that phrase all the time. How do we get our disengaged employees to engage? Well, the only thing you can do, the best thing to do, the most humane thing to do, is engage them out the door. Help them find somewhere else.
Yeah.
All right. So there are some accurate statistics, really. When we talk about engagement, understand that, honestly, most of your employees are not disengaged in their roles. We fluctuate, and most employees really want to come and do a good job. So the question is, really, and the truth is, we all want to engage. It's our nature. It's our natural behavior, our nature. We all want to engage. The truth is, our job as managers, as leaders, as HR professionals, as members of the organization is to help those individuals figure out how to engage. Okay? So truth number one, let's look at the second myth. I love this one. We're reading so much lately about employee happiness, right? All kinds of articles we see, academic articles, presentations. It's addressed to how do we help our employees be happy.
I was going to say I saw something today that was all about happy emojis, right? That not only is it just in academic right. where they're talking about happiness, but it's can we show them an emoji? How happy are you today with an emoji?
That's right. So. That's right. You know, you get all kinds of surveys that have the three faces, right? You have a smiley face, you have a neutral face, mm-hmm. you have a negative face. That's not what we're talking about. Employee satisfaction and employee happiness are different. Let's talk a little bit about what employee happiness is. And I want to start by asking this question here that we ask quite regularly when we work with organizations. So we'll go in and we'll present to a group of people, and we always ask this question, what does a good day at work look like for you? You know, my favorite response to that one comes up every time, every single time, is every time my boss is away, it's a good day at work, right? you get that feeling, don't you? Every time my boss is away, what does a good day at work look like for you? Now, you've been in these exercises before. What are some of the common responses?
Where people say that they're accomplishing things.
Right.
You see that they're able to move forward with projects, their interactions with other people. They have positive interactions. So those types of things.
Well, it's interesting. As interesting as the responses are, what's equally interesting is what the responses are not. So what are those responses not telling us? I have yet to hear any time I get paid is a good day. I have yet to hear any time I get extra perks is a good day.
Or my computer turned on today.
My computer turned on. Here's one. I felt safe at work today.
Yeah.
Right. This is what we refer to in organizational behavior as a hygiene factor. The idea that if these items are present, they don't create engagement. If they are not present or we take them away, they become disengaging or demotivating in what we do. This is the concept of perks, right? And so one of the myths that we are addressing here is the idea that if we give you more, you will give me more. What you see here is, and this is in Justin's office. This is Justin actually relaxing in Justin's nap pod in his office.
That would be nice.
Love the idea of the nap pods. Just creative, kind of fun. You know, dropping your laundry off at the front door, bring your pet to work day. You know, Taco Tuesdays. The problem with Taco Tuesdays is they work great until you find out that the company down the street has Fajita Fridays too, and then all of a sudden you disengage in what you do. So when we talk about perks, the idea here is that, yes, perks are valuable. They create a great brand experience, right? So when we talk the employee experience, they create that brand. People join the organization because of these. Do they create engagement? Do they create happiness? Let's talk about what engagement really is. So when we talk about engagement, we use a couple of kind of an analogy here, a couple symbols. The first one is that engagement is when we're willing to give our heart, our hands, our spirits, and our mind to what we do. When we talk about heart, what we're really talking about is that love that you have for your job. I mentioned a little bit earlier, I love what I do. I wouldn't do it otherwise. When I'm on hour 14 of a 15-hour flight, it's that love that I have for my job that helps me remember why I'm doing what I do. We also have spirit. When we talk about spirit, what we're talking about is, take for example, you walk into a sports arena and you feel that team spirit that exists, right? There's a passion, an emotion that exists there. I can walk into an office and in about 15 minutes tell what that mood of that office is. You can really feel it. It's palpable. So we talk about heart and spirit. We also talk about mind and hands. The mind and hands, the mind represents that innovation. Am I actually thinking? Is it something that I'm thinking through? When there's something that comes across the assembly line and I realize it could be done better, am I willing to be innovative and think through problems and solve problems, as well as my hands, which really create the action? Am I actually doing something because of it? So when we look at these, we have two components to engagement. The first component is the feeling component, right? It's I feel something. The second component is the doing component. So engagement means I have to both feel and do. So Justin, let's talk about happiness for a second. When you look at happiness, do you believe it's possible for an employee to be happy in her job yet be not doing anything because of it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, we've worked with a number of organizations that are on two ends of the spectrum. The one end of the spectrum is the employee organization who really focuses on employee happiness. Fantastic. Wonderful. Please don't think I'm against that. But they're so focused on that feeling piece that they become organizations sometimes that actually aren't getting anything done. You have a bunch of employees who are feeling happy and feeling good but not getting things done. The other side of that equation, the opposite end is the organization that is very productive. They're getting the minds and the hands, yet what happens in that organization is they become so cold, they're not feeling. So in order to engage, you have to have both of these components. Engagement involves both feeling and doing. It's like this. We use this analogy of the two oars in a rowboat. Have you ever been on a rowboat, by the way?
Yes.
Yeah, I know that you work a lot with young men and scouting and things along those lines. I spent a lot of time in rowboats as well. One of the things that you learn very, very quickly is if you're focused on your strong hand, on your strong arm, basically what happens is you go around in circles, right? Because you're rowing with one oar. Engagement is a lot like this, and you consider the two oars being the two parts of this, both feeling and doing. Engagement means that we're actually creating something where we feel good about what we do. Our spirits and our hearts are there, but we're also doing something because of it. That is to engage. All right, so when we talk about employee engagement, it's important to note the what really happens, the idea that if we give them more, they will give us more. When it comes to perks, here's what we find. So we're looking at this chart here, and the orange represents the organization effort. Now, when I say organization effort, it means what is the company doing to create so-called engagement, including perks, things along those lines. We also have this blue line, which represents employee engagement. This is the actual engagement level of the company and the individuals. And then we also have this results line. That results line represents what is the company getting because of this. The interesting thing is that to a certain point, we create and we give something as an organization, the employee will give an equal amount back. All right, so we see the results of that effort. Now, what happens, however, is that the organization continues to give, we start to see a decline in the amount of return on that investment. So basically, there's a point where it's once we hit that transactional mark, additional investment in perks and things along those lines don't create employee engagement. So am I starting to depress you a little bit by this concept?
No, I just saw your quid pro quo on there.
Right.
Never has a phrase had a different meaning than it does right now.
That's right. That's exactly right. You got it. So that's the concept here. The truth is employee satisfaction is not employee engagement, and we can't perk our way into the hearts, spirits, minds, and hands. Do perks have a place in an organization? Absolutely. It's great to have Taco Tuesday. I'd be surprised if we don't get interrupted in our webinar with people playing foosball out in the hall. It's great. It's wonderful. But can we perk our way to engagement? No. We will talk a little bit later about the things that our research has found that does create that engagement.
Great.
All right. Ready to move on to the next myth?
Let's go. Yeah. So let's talk through this for just a minute. So the next myth is the organization controls the employee experience. So this is where the full burden lies yep. right on the shoulders of the organization.
Here's where this came from. As we work with organizations, one of the things that happens, so we'll go and do an employee survey, right? So we do employee surveys all the way from 30 employees up to hundreds of thousands of employees. And one of the things that happens almost inevitably, regardless of the size of the organization, whether it's that 30 employees or whether that's 150,000 employees, the senior team, including HR, grabs the survey results, and the first thing they do is they all get together and say, we need to take care of this. So the top 8 people in the organization, we need to fix this. There's a myth here, and that myth is that the top 8 people of the organization or the organization itself can actually create employee engagement or the employee experience. So let me tell you a little story here. These are two friends. These are Monroe and Reggie. Monroe and Reggie grew up together. This is a true story, by the way. Monroe and Reggie grew up together, and they went to the same elementary and secondary schools. They grew up in the same neighborhood. They hung out together as friends. They decided to pursue similar paths, and what happened was Monroe got the job first, and Monroe said, hey, Reggie, come join me here. They worked in a manufacturing facility, and their job responsibilities are almost identical. They work under the same supervisor. Same responsibilities, same job, same work hours, etc. Now, when you look at their employee life cycle, the ELC, the employee life cycle is nearly identical. Everything about that is identical. So we may look at that and say their employee experience is identical. Let me tell you the rest of the story. Monroe is single, and Monroe plays guitar in a late night band. Sounds like a bad Bob Seger song, doesn't it? Right. So we have Monroe playing guitar in a late night band. Thing that happens is they need to both be to work at 7 o'clock in the morning. So that's a little bit early for Monroe. Now we have, on the other hand, Reggie, who has, 2 kids who are involved in, sports, a young lady who's involved in soccer, and we have one who's involved in basketball. They like to get home. Reggie likes to get home early. Reggie likes to be home at 2 o'clock in the afternoon so that he can spend time with his family, get them moved around to their ball games, etc. That doesn't work for Monroe. So we have 2 different employee experiences here. The experience that Monroe has is not meeting his expectations, whereas for Reggie, they are. Although the company provides exactly the same employee life cycle, same benefits, same compensation, and everything. So the question comes is, do they have an identical employee experience? And the answer to that is no. So who controls the employee experience? Well, let's talk about, first of all, some definitions that we tend to confuse. Justin, can you help me out on this?
And we'll for get sure, you to and I think this those. Is really important because currently we see a lot of literature, people, conversation, right. just simply supplanting employee engagement with the employee experience.
Exactly right. And just so changing the name,
just
basically,
changing
is what we've
the
done.
Name.
And by the way, it used to be employee satisfaction yeah. and employee well-being, then employees. Yeah, so we see this evolution.
And they are not the same thing.
Right.
And that employee experience. So the employee experience is the sum of all interactions between an organization and its employees.
Excellent. And that's what results in, it impacts the way an individual thinks, feels, and performs.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that and the difference between employee engagement then, right? So that was the employee experience, now employee engagement.
Yeah, so engagement is the emotional state in which we feel passionate, energetic, and committed to our work.
This in turn results in us investing our best selves, our hearts, spirits, minds, and hands. So if we look at it this way, really what happens is we have the employee experience, which is the cause. It's the antecedent. It's the reason, right? The employee engagement is the result or what happens because of this. Because of this, we tend to be engaged in what we do if our employee experience is what we want it to be.
Yeah. And I really like that with the employee experience being the sum of all interactions. And those interactions are planned and unplanned interactions.
Exactly right.
And so how we respond in those planned and unplanned is what's going to cause some of that engagement to exist. And
that's right.
For those who are wondering, the book, The Employee Experience, that's what you do a great job of outlining. I know we're going to talk a little bit about that as well, but that's where that becomes so powerful, and those misalignments really impact what can be done on the employee engagement side.
You're right.
If that experience, if we have those gaps.
Thank you. I appreciate you mentioning that. That book is really about expectation alignment. How do we align our expectations? So we have Monroe, who has certain expectations, Reggie, who has certain expectations. For one of those, the expectations are met. For the other, it's not. So how much of that does the organization actually control? Let's further explore the definition of what the EX is. So employee experience equals the actual experience that you're having. So we have Monroe and Reggie, who both experience. They walk in. These are the facts only. They walk in every day at 7 o'clock in the morning. Plus the expectations. So there's where we start misaligning a bit. Monroe and Reggie have different expectations. And the perception of whether those expectations are being met or not. So when we look at the top of the organization controlling the employee experience, we realize that actually it's more about the employee than it is the experience.
Yeah. I'd add to that too, Tracy. I think the individual manager has a real impact in that, helping the individual employee understand what their experience is. You know, obviously I have the benefit of the book and what we talk about here at DecisionWise, but several months ago I brought my team in one by one and I asked them that question. What is the experience that you want to have here at DecisionWise? And what are you succeeding at with that experience? And where are we missing the mark? And what was interesting is it got everyone thinking, well, what is that experience that I want to have here? And so my job as a manager was to help my team understand, look, this is you too, and we're going to work to help you have the best experience possible, but you need to come to the table as well.
We're going to talk in just a moment about the role of the manager here, but I think you bring up something very important, is that I as a CEO don't have that ability to align that experience the way you do as a direct manager, that individual. So we'll talk a lot more about that, and the idea here that here's the next myth. The employee experience is created at the top of the organization. The organization controls the employee experience. Can we get into some research? Is
let's
that okay?
Do it. Yeah, let's
So I'm going to present some statistics in a way that I hope are going to be useful about the organization's impact. So this was based on our 32 million survey responses. By the way, it's up to 34 million now. And the idea here is, what is the responsibility of an organization in the employee experience? So some interesting facts. When an employee's perception of the organization is negative, we find more than 12 times the number of fully disengaged employees than what we expect. All right, so if I have a negative view of the company that I work for, DecisionWise, and my team does, of the company, it could be a negative view because of our philosophy, it could be our mission, our direction, then I am 12 times more likely to be disengaged than I would be normally. That's an interesting statistic. So the organization does impact engagement, but maybe in a different way than we had anticipated. Next, when an employee's perception of the organization is slightly negative, we find more than 4 times the number of fully disengaged employees than expected. All right, so less, but still impacts it. All right, couple more. Let's look at the other side of the equation as well. When an employee's perception of the organization is positive, we find more than double the number of fully engaged employees than expected. Take this one step further. Negative perceptions have greater impact, so we have the 12 times, the 4 times, and the 2 times, on employee engagement than does positive perceptions. Let's synthesize this, make some sense out of it. What this says is that a negative perception of an organization has far more impact than a positive perception of an organization. All right, so let's look back to perks. I can keep throwing perks at the equation and make a little bit of a difference, but if my view of the organization is negative, that will far outweigh any perk that I ever receive.
Yeah, it's interesting that when we saw these stats come through, I was thinking about, I have two friends that one's a fireman and one's a police officer. And they're always talking about how the fireman gets all the accolades and everybody loves him. And the police officer, everybody hates the police officer, has it, you know, and it comes back to this, that a negative experience, oh, a policeman gave me a ticket, or, you know, I had a negative experience with that. Even though the police officer might be doing a ton of good out there, that negative perception seems to hang along around a lot longer than, you know, the fireman who everything's positive. And, you know, so it's interesting how we hang on to those negative experiences so much easier.
It's so interesting, you know, when you look at this and you spend so much time at the top of the organization trying to create engagement. And I'm doing air quotes here, create engagement. When we realize that the most important thing to do is just don't mess it up.
Yeah.
Right? So we'll talk more about that. Where is engagement created? So it's not something that's necessarily created at the organization level, although the organization can impact it. Let's talk about a manager's impact. And Justin, I know these were some facts that you were very interested in, both as a leader and as what we're seeing out there in the literature. You want to talk a little bit more about this?
Sure. So when a manager's engagement score increases by just 1 point, we see a 213% increase in the odds of their direct reports being engaged.
All right, so we have a survey that we conduct 1 year, and your engagement overall on a 5-point scale averages about 3. Next year, you take the survey again, and it's gone to 4. So you've increased your engagement level. What that means is that your team, on average, will see a 213% increase in their engagement. Wow, that's powerful. Just because you as their manager engage.
And this really drives to the point where we talk about, and I know we're going to talk a little bit more about it, but engagement is something that can be learned, and we have to choose too. Managers that choose to be engaged, the impact that they make on their team is significant with that. And let's go through some more of these stats.
It's the Michael Jackson song, I'm looking at the man in the mirror, right? Yeah. That's where it starts. Figure out yourself and your own engagement. If your team's disengaged, look in the mirror first.
Correct. So let's go to this next one. When a manager is fully engaged, we find 87% more than the typical number of fully engaged direct reports. That is significant.
Isn't that huge?
Yeah.
Okay, so again, the fact that you as a manager engaged, fully engaged, 87% more of your employees are fully engaged.
Yeah. And what's different, a little different about this is the positive impact that we see at the manager level versus at the organizational level. The impact that's being had at the manager level when it's positive is far greater than the positive impact that the organization has. Has some negative, and we'll show the negative here in just a second, but the positive impact is far greater at the manager level.
So those 8 executives sitting up on the 38th floor trying to fix engagement, you have an influence, you do, but it really is local.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's look at the other side of that equation, too.
So when a manager, did it come up? There we go. When a manager is fully disengaged, we find 75% more than the typical number of fully disengaged direct reports. And when an employee's perception of their manager is positive, so let's take that first one. When a manager is fully disengaged, we find 75% more than the typical number of fully disengaged direct reports.
Yeah. So you as a manager disengage, your employees are disengaged too.
Very much so. When an employee's perception of their manager is positive, the likelihood of finding fully engaged employees on the manager's team increases by 71%.
So this is just the fact that I like you, you do things for me, we talk. You don't have to be my best friend, right? But the idea here is that I like you as a manager. I have a positive perception of what you do.
Yeah.
71% more likely to engage.
Yeah. Now, here's the kicker. When that perception changes and it's negative, Look at this. Over 8 times. When an employee's perception of their manager is negative, we find over 8 times the typical number of fully disengaged employees.
Excellent.
So wow. if I'm a business leader and I want to try to fix an area or work on an area, I'm working right on my managers right at them.
In fact, we work with a number of organizations that understand the concept that engagement actually is a competency. You can learn it. You can teach it. You can practice it. And you can hold people accountable for it. Sophisticated organizations in engagement actually hold their managers accountable for engagement. We use this concept that we refer to as the engagement maturity continuum. At the first step of that, basically engagement means we measure, right? So we have organizations who say their engagement, they're working on engagement. What that means is they do an engagement survey. Fantastic, great. The next step of that really is what we refer to as these organizations who are at the commitment level. What that means is that they are committed to engagement instead of just measuring it, but really the organization's not necessarily committed to it. HR is. So engagement in these organizations is owned by HR. Justin, we see, I would say, a majority of the companies that we work with trying to move from commitment, which is this is an HR initiative, to the next level, which is really management. What that means is I, in HR, no longer own this. This is not an HR initiative. It's a leadership management initiative. Yeah. So where we were just talking about that, these are the organizations that understand that their managers are the key to creating an engaging environment. And the shift in accountability moves from HR to the manager.
Yeah, for sure.
This is a huge step in engagement. This is moving from the commitment level to the management level is where we see organizations actually see business results because the managers now create that environment where people can choose to engage. The next level is what we refer to integration level. We have only about 10 to 15% of clients that we've ever seen anywhere are actually at this level with their engagement efforts. What this means is that engagement is prioritized and valued by all the leaders to the point that it's integrated into the organization's strategy. When they're talking about their 2020 strategy, they're not just talking about financial numbers. They're talking about how do we create an environment in which people can choose to engage. It's integrated into their compensation plans. It's integrated into their mission statement. Their customer experience, it's integrated into that. The final level, and we see less than 5% of companies ever reaching this level, and it may not be the right level for everybody, but basically what this is the employee experience is the key differentiator and the key competitive advantage. The reason why this organization is better than the competition is because of their employee experience.
Yeah. When we were in Brazil, we got to meet with a company that this is a goal of theirs. And they're very close to, you know, to getting there where it's integrated in everything. And you got to speak to their full, you know, what were there, 40 top executives of the organization. And it matters to them. Every component of the employee experience matters to that company. And it was exciting to see. And it was exciting to see the CEO say, this matters to me and it matters to us as a company.
This is a company of 10,000 employees. It's not a small company. Yep. And to see the CEO say, no, it is part, it's what makes us who we are.
Yeah.
That's the master.
That was really cool.
Very good. So here's the truth. We talked about the idea that the organization owns the employee experience. The truth is, we all own the employee experience. The organization, the manager, create the environment that can invite us to engage, but ultimately, the individual must choose to engage. And a lot of that is the result of that relationship with that manager.
And Tracy, can I just add to that?
Please.
Choose to engage. Without education, it's really hard to choose. And so there has to be a learning component to that as well. And we spend a lot of time training and developing employees, and we need to try to figure out how to connect those dots when it comes to training and how it relates to their individual engagement. Because if I want to choose to be engaged, I also need to learn what that means. And so as we talk about this, you know, engagement is a competency that can be both developed and learned. And I think that when we learn those, we can then choose how to engage.
Thank you for mentioning that concept of the competency again. If we think that engagement is a feeling, if we think it's happiness, it's hard to learn how to create happiness in another individual. The reason that is because happiness is very individualized. My happiness doesn't depend on you. My happiness depends on me. When you view engagement as a competency, both feeling and doing, we can learn how to help people do. We can learn how to help. We can learn about one-on-one meetings and what to do in a one-on-one meeting. We can learn what questions to ask employees. You asked your employees a great question, which is, how do I create, what experience are you trying to create? That's the type of education that you can do with your managers to help them understand what that is.
And we spend a lot of time with action planning and initiatives and whatnot, and how do we hold our managers accountable for what they're doing. And quite honestly, they don't know what they need to do. They've never connected those dots. And so we need to help managers connect the dots to understand this is, it's important to help your employees understand what that experience is. As a manager, you need to understand that. So part of our action planning that we always spend all this time and effort in on employee engagement surveys is, how do we help the managers understand their competencies?
Yeah.
In engaging their team, in building their team, in what that means. And it starts with them first, and then they can go outward.
Beautiful. We actually, there's a question that came in. Thank you for your questions, by the way. One of the questions that came in is, what is your advice on how to move it to the manager level and how to hold managers accountable on an annual basis? I love the question because it's actually related to some of the other questions that we received. The idea here is yeah, it was an HR initiative, but in order to make this a truly organization initiative, the managers have to buy in. Number one, we have to assume and understand that engaging is a competency. You can actually learn how to do that, but like you said, we have to educate the manager on how to make that happen. There are some simple things, such as we provide managers with questions. If you look at the magic book, for example, after each one of the chapters, there's a series of questions that you can ask. We're going to talk here in just a moment about the concept of magic. One of the things the managers can do very clearly is understand where these employees do get their magic. Holding people accountable. We actually have organizations that will take a look at employee engagement scores, and if those scores for a particular department are within the lowest decile or lowest 15%, that manager actually goes through. It's not a remediation. It's additional training on how do I create engagement in the organization. But the organization has to be willing to put that burden, I say burden, it's not, that responsibility on the manager, not the top eight people in the corporation.
Yeah, and not give them another thing they have to check off.
That's right.
But how to learn behaviors that become part of them, right? We talk about Perfect. This being and doing. Let's get away from the doing tasks, because it is something that they can become.
Yep.
They can learn to become engaged and help others the same.
We use the tagline, engaging people. Right? And engaging people is a double entendre. It has two meanings. The one meaning is a verb, and the verb means actually an action that you make it happen. The other part is the adjective that says these are individuals that describes the individual. One of the things you can do is help the managers both understand how to be that person and be also the person that creates that engaging action. All right, so very good. We saw that. Now, let's talk about some good news. We've talked about all these myths. Let's talk about what we found really creates engagement. As we looked at these 30-plus million survey responses, when we first did this, by the way, Justin, we had 14 million survey responses. Yep. When we wrote the first book. And from that, as we've doubled that database, we found the same thing over and over and over again. And what we found is very clearly there are five things that create engagement in whatever we do. That could be the organization, could be our marriage, could be a relationship, could be the community, family, whatever it is. But when these five elements are present, we tend to engage in whatever that is. And let's talk about what those five elements are. We use an acronym that's very easy to remember. And this acronym is based off of these 34 million survey responses and these five keys on how to engage people. This acronym is MAGIC. First of all, it's important to understand that the satisfaction elements have to be in place, right? So we have to pay our employees. We have to make sure they're safe. We have to make sure they have the tools, resources, those things that don't necessarily engage but have to be there. It's the price of admission. On top of that, however, if we truly want to engage, we find that there are five things: meaning, autonomy, growth, impact, and connection. And we'll talk briefly about each one of these. Justin, when these five elements are present, to the degree that the employee wants these present, this creates engagement in an organization.
And one might be more important to somebody else than another, right? So that we don't have to be 100% in all of them, but there are elements of those that can definitely impact an individual's engagement.
Well, when you look at yourself, which would you say is most impactful for
growth.
You?
Growth. That's really easy for me. Yep. So growth and meaning are the two that I, you know, I need to have. Connection, I like to connect with people, but I can also work in isolation and do that fine. But growth and meaning definitely are my two biggest things.
So what you bring up is something important. Again, the idea that these five elements create engagement. When they're there, it gives us the opportunity to choose to engage. However, for different individuals, one will play a more important role than another. Still, every one of these are important in engagement.
Yeah, if you took away my autonomy,
it's
gone, right? Like, yeah, I'll feel that really fast.
Let's talk about each one. Now, what we didn't set out to do was create a clever acronym and then support it with research. What we did is we looked at this and said, what really are the pieces that create engagement? We actually came up with six. And when we came up with these six, we realized that two of them were actually the same thing. So impact and progress were actually the same element that we combined. And fortuitously, actually, it came up with magic. It's an easy way to remember it. The first one is meaning. Right, so meaning is when the job has purpose or your work has purpose beyond just the job itself. Meaning is an interesting one. And the reason that is because we're seeing a lot of writing lately about meaning in job, finding purpose in what you do. Now, remember, we're not just talking about the workplace. We're talking about could be a marriage, could be family, could be whatever that may be. When you find that there's a reason for what you're doing, you're far more likely to be engaged. Meaning has a lot of different pieces here. I remember a number of years ago that I walked onto an airplane, and as I walked on the airplane, the person in front of me was wearing a shirt that said, "I'm part of a team building the world's largest indoor coliseum." So I'm a consultant, so I have to ask the questions, right? So I asked the question. I was curious. "So tell me about what you do." And he said, "Well," and he described being part of a team that was building an arena in the Philippines. And I was enthralled as he was talking about this. He was talking about how he was talking about the electrical system, was talking about the acoustic system, and how excited he was. And I saw that he really found purpose in what he did. I asked him to describe his day for me. I could tell that he was probably some type of engineer, probably managed a group of people. And he started describing the day for me. And he said, "Well, for the next 90 days, my job is to go around and put the screws in all of the little switch plates that are the outlets." So all he did was put the face of the electric outlets on for 90 days. I thought this person was an acoustics engineer or managing a large group of people. No, he was part of a team building the world's largest indoor coliseum, and his role was to put the switch plates on each one of the outlets. He found purpose that was greater than just the job itself. Should we go to the next one?
Let's do it.
Justin, this one is actually my key driver, right? The autonomy. That's the reason, part of the reason why DecisionWise exists, because I wanted to do things that I saw things happening my way. Autonomy is the power to shape your work and your environment in ways that allow you to perform at your best. Okay? What this means is, do you see people confuse this with anarchy?
Oh, all the time. They see autonomy and they think, okay, that free means for all. Do whatever you want. Lord of the Rings, here we come. Or not Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies, me. Exactly right.
Here we come.
Here's the idea with autonomy. Autonomy says that you, the organization and the manager and you, create boundaries. You create fences, right? So these fences, picture, for example, a soccer field, a football field. In that soccer field, you have boundaries, and you must stay within those boundaries. But you play within certain rules within those boundaries, and you're free to make that happen. I love jazz. I love jazz music. One of the reasons I love jazz is because it sets very clear boundaries. So the boundaries are time, key. You know, you may play in a 12 bar type style. There are certain chord progressions you need to follow. You need to follow rhythms. But as long as you do that, you're free to improvise within those and create a different type of sound. So that's one of the reasons I love jazz. That happens in a work environment as well. The manager and the organization, along with the employee, may set the boundaries. Those boundaries may be temporal boundaries. They may be spatial boundaries. They may be social task boundaries, whatever it is. And then they allow the employee to do their work, their magic, within those boundaries. All right. So Autonomy really is the power to shape your work and environment in ways that allow you to perform at your best. Ready to move to the next one?
Yep, because this one's my driver.
This one's yours. You want to explain this one to us?
Sure. Growth is being stretched and challenged in ways that result in personal and professional progress. And I think there's a lot of confusion that comes with this as well, that everyone thinks that it's upward momentum, right?
Right. It's the next adding senior to your title.
Right. So right now, if we were to do that, my next job is your job, right? So that's not happening right now.
Come at it. Just.
So how do I grow as a person and develop in what I'm doing? And again, with my team, this is something we focus on. Every one of my team members has a growth component of what we talk about. What is it that we want to do? What things am I learning? And some of them are related to their job, and some of them are not.
Right.
But it's so important that we're constantly growing. And I find this for me as well. And I know you and I share a hobby of photography.
Right.
And it's a way that, how do we grow in something else that we can, you know, learn new skills and different things. And it's fun to see ourselves grow and progress in what we're doing.
Exactly. In fact, this one is so important. Just an interesting statistic. Bureau of Labor Statistics says that by next year, 2020, 52% of our workforce will be made up of millennials. Okay. So, and by the way, in another 5 years, 70% of the global workforce will be made up of millennials. As we do our surveys, one of the things we find that for this particular age group, growth is more important than any of the others. So congratulations, you just became part of the millennial.
I am. I mean, I would like to think that I'm there, but I'm just a few years ahead of them.
We'll give you the nod anyway. So the idea here is that I will leave my job faster, or I will join an environment faster if there are growth opportunities than anywhere else. The opposite of growth, remember, is stagnation. If I feel I'm stagnant in my job, if I feel I'm stagnant in my relationships, stagnant in my community, I will disengage. Growth is one of the keys. Let's go to the next one. Let's look at the I. So we have meaning, we have autonomy, we have growth, and the next one is impact. Impact is seeing positive and worthwhile results from the work we do. We worked with a healthcare organization a number of years ago, and this is a story that we wrote in the Engagement Magic book that I absolutely love. We were presenting to a group of about 400 people. They were healthcare professionals, the top of their game. So we had doctors, nurses, and all other parts of the hospital. So we had dietary, we had health, we had housekeeping, we had facilities, and these were the leaders of these groups, about 400 of them. And we talked about impact being seeing positive and worthwhile results from the work you do. It's the idea of making progress in what you do, right? You see the results and you feel like you're making progress in the things you do. We had one of the nurses stand up and ask the question. She says, I'm a nurse and I do a great job, I love my job, and I'm engaged because of impact. I get to see these patients get healed and go home. I love it. Doctors, same thing, but I'm having a hard time understanding how, for example, these other departments, such as dietary or housekeeping, they don't see these results of their effort. How do they engage in what they do? And she sat down, and there was a woman in the back, far back, stood up, and she actually stood on one of the chairs, so she was very easy to see. Everyone turned and looked at her, and she was waving her hands, and she said, "Let me tell you something. I work in dietary. My job is to take food to these patients. And every time I take food to the patients, I sit down and I talk to them and I ask them about them. I don't ask them about how their blood pressure is. I ask them how they're doing. I ask about their family. And I bring them something different than the rest of you bring every day. And I make a difference in their lives. And I feel good every time I leave a room. And the patient feels good when I leave a room." She said, "That's impact." And she sat back down. And all 400 people stood up and gave her a standing ovation and clapped. That's impact. We can find impact in anything we do, but we have to search for that impact. If it's not there, we're not making any progress in the things that we do.
It's funny. I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and somebody came up to our table and asked this exact question. I have a manufacturing facility, and I don't see the employees just don't see the impact of what they're doing. And I shared that example and shared one with a medical device, you know, how they shared what the customer, the end use patient was seeing from that medical device. And we have to get creative sometimes to be able to see the impact and help our employees connect the dots. But it's really, really important for our employees to see what we do and how it makes an impact in the organizations and the world around them.
Right. We call that line of sight, by the way. The idea is that you see the result of your effort. In fact, even in our own organization, one of the things we want to make sure that we're doing is we have a lot of individuals that don't necessarily deal directly with the client and see the impact of what we do with the client. So we try to help them understand that and see that directly of what the result of their effort, how it ties into the overall picture. That's impact. Meaning, autonomy, growth, impact, and finally, we have connection. Connection is a sense of belonging to something beyond yourself. When I say that, many people automatically think social connection. They think, I have friends that I work with. I'm connected to my boss. Well, for some people, that's connection. But connection just means that you're a part of something. A connection means that I'm a part of the organization, so I may be connected to the organization. I may be connected to our mission. I believe in what we do. I may be connected to the vision. I may be connected to the fact that I just love to develop code, and so I'm connected that way. So connection is a sense of belonging to something greater than yourself. Justin, as we look at engagement, this key actually has more impact for most people than any other key.
Correct.
Statistically speaking.
Well, and you see that in everyday activity, right? So we always talk about the employee experience, and I think Deloitte tagged this, and I like what they said. We really have a human experience, right? So we act the same at work as we do as consumers, as we do when we go to church, as we do when we go shopping, and you see this in that connection that you feel. Why do you shop at that grocery store? Well, I like the way people treat me. I feel connected to it. Or why do you go to that church? Oh, I feel the connection there. I, you know, my friend. Anyway, that connection is really important in our human experiences that we have all around us, and it's no different at work.
You know what's interesting, and I hate to bring up this topic, but it's something that's so important, especially today, when we talk about mental health and emotional health. A lot of research lately when it comes to suicide prevention has found very clearly that when I find a reason to stay in this life, then I will stay. And that reason is a connection.
Yeah.
That connection means that someone is depending on me, or I'm depending on someone, or I'm part of something. That is something that will provide a sense of meaning in what we do, a reason for being around what we do. Connection and meaning are very, very closely related.
And really, connection connects the dots.
It does.
It brings those together and allows us to see how the other elements of the magic are working together.
Excellent. So we've gone through today, and we've talked about four myths and those myths of engagement that can be damaging to our organization. And we've talked about how do we actually create engagement. If these myths don't work, what actually does create engagement in the things that we do? And it's very, very clear that what we found is that, first of all, take care of the satisfaction elements. You have to pay your employees right. You have to have safety and tools and resources and the things they need. But that doesn't create engagement. Perks are part of that satisfaction factor. What creates engagement is meaning, autonomy, growth, impact, and connection. Thanks, Justin. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today.
Well, thank you, Tracy. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be with us. And this has been fantastic. I think we've done a good job of addressing the questions as they've come in. And we're really right up against it with time. So for those who are wondering, this webinar will be rebroadcast on our Bright Talk channel. We will send that out to everyone after this, along with the codes for the SHRM and HRCI credits. But please rewatch this webinar as well as all of our other webinars on our Bright Talk channel. So thank you again for participating, and hope that this has been a good experience for you.
Pleasure. Thank you.